Today you will understand why it is infinitely more wise of your being to participate. And that perhaps that day it didn't pay off as somewhere you think it should. Maybe it didn't have room to. Perhaps the day when you have a solitary moment, it will. And if you become infinitely wiser to understand that participation evolves you quicker to get you to a place where you are much more in control than out of control, then you'd be called a wise man or woman. And you can say that I'm wrong, I'm this and I'm that. I'll never be anything you think I am, because I'm much bigger than such a small thought. And it is only 8:45. Now, with that in mind, the things that you learn these fine days and nights that we're together, you may learn without one word. You just may be pressed into service, into the action itself. Just participate. What are you going to do? Stand there and argue with me? You won't win. You will not win. Are you going to lay on your mat and try to get someone to move you? I'll run this entire audience over you. And the next time you think you're going to loitering, we should put up a sign, no loitering around the gate. You just may get the shock of your life. And toilets can be electrified too. We are here to learn. We are here to participate. We are here to be a better garment for God. We are here to know everlasting life. Now, with that, duly inspired, I want you to get yourselves ready. We are going to go to the labyrinth. The galaxies, the dimensional galaxies, universes, multitudinous universes, rock and gas and light and radiation, extraordinary vapors, electrical and magnetic fusions, suns and telstars and quasars, suns that are golden and blue and lavender, and planets that are green and gold and rosy hue, all floating in an endless sea, around, within, above, below, asleep,
a midnight, a deep, a blue. It is as if the whole of creation existed within a fishbowl, and that there was a lonely observer to the whole of creation that watched this extraordinary life, though gigantic in perception from a wee speck of dust, to becoming small and contracted to a great eye that viewed all of creation. Let us imagine what sort of agony, what sort of longing, what sort of passion could have built up between one who was the mist, who was the blue, who was the void, that from its skin and its surface came all the universes in all of its diverse form, and that every planet with its own special life forms that exist in colors and texture, beating hearts of all colors and shapes. Imagine the passion. Imagine the longing that we could only begin to, in a small way, imagine that the great is had for its creation. It is like possessing a will-o'-wisp and loving it because of its beauty and its fairy-like freedom. Long to embrace it, long to hold it, to stroke it, to caress it. And alas, no matter how close you hold it, you can never feel it. Only your own aloneness, imagine what the void must feel for that which is of it, but it is not. It is as if all creation was that beautiful lover that you look at every day, and you close your eyes and you can still see. It dances through your thoughts and your dreams. And every word on your lips is about that love. Embrace is not enough. A touch is not enough. There is a deeper longing. You create something, and you can say, it is the breath of my breath. Indeed, it is the flesh of my flesh. Indeed, it is animated from my being. And yet, I am empty, for I long for its union. So must God that created all of this long for its union. Imagine for a moment the gods, if we can call them that, those extraordinary levels of thought. They're intertwined with one another and meshed and began a concept. Perhaps it was the lily. Perhaps it was a blade of grass. Perhaps it was a dewdrop or a leaf that rocks slow as it descends to the Mother Earth. Imagine the gods created the deep color lavender or the brilliant morning color of orange and rose and gold, the color that laces early clouds. Imagine creating something that has the feeling of silk or velvet or fur, but not knowing that. Imagine how lonely the gods were to have created so many beautiful, intriguing things that they could look at all day, if we can call time a day, but to want to possess them. How close do you get to a lily? How much of yellow and rose and gold, if you shine it on your beautiful countenance, is that close enough? If you want to swallow it and ingest it into all of your thinking, is that close enough? No, it still leaves you longing and wanting. Is it any wonder that the foundations of the world, indeed, the foundations of all universes, the foundations and the concepts of stars yet to be born, elements yet to be conceived of, before all of that, there was a deep longing? Imagine in your great minds for a moment what the suffering must be for one who cannot embrace and feel the embrace, for one who longs to touch but cannot feel the touch, for one whose love is so bountiful and unfulfilled that it would conceive, plot, and plan in its way a way to divide itself and to journey within itself at opposing poles. It would be a house divided against itself for the sake, for the love of the world, for the love of the lily, for the love of the rose, for the love of the color yellow and rose-colored mornings and gilded clouds, to become that which is mass itself, to have become the little fairy that takes on the form of the lily, but is alive and vital and perches her beautiful self at the tip of a stem and knows the embrace of the wind when she exhales her perfume. And God rejoices. Consciousness rejoices. It is the perfume. It is the flower. It hears the babbling brook. And it has kissed the wind. Could it be that the whole of intelligence could be caught up within the flower? Could all of God be the flower for a moment, to be able to understand morning and night and brightly colored insects and familiar lilies? There's a truth to those little beings that dance around flowers and lights that live inside of old trees. There really is a song in the quicksilver brook, and there really is a wind that whispers sweet. There really is a place that walking on the earth is like walking on some kind heart. There really have been places where a rock looks like an old man, because the old man was the rock and left deep his impression. There really are places that can still be heard, the singing of voices, old but young, a remembrance of a song of when God was the flower and the brook and the rock, and that bright and beautiful morning and that starry, starry night, and when God was the will-o'-wisp moving in and out of ancient oak. Can you imagine being torn from your lover's bosom and knowing such pain? Can you imagine the moment of unification, the joy and the celebration, and life so sweet that that is what it is for consciousness to have been every living thing, to have given it a greater side of blue, to have given it a sweeter smell of dew, to have colored it a deeper hue. All of these things are only empty shadows, unless within them has lived something that has longed for their union, life. And the ultimate journey was for God to create for itself a vestige, a vessel, for it to move through such wonderful places and to be able to know the mystery of sleep and the fresheningness of morning. What is all of this if it yet cannot be experienced? And what is life if the pulse of life lives outside of the experience of it? You have not learned to love until you have occupied that which longs for that union. You have not known passion until your lover is in your bosom. You have not known freedom and mirthful song. You have not known how to dance under starry skies, full of the vibrant mystery of the night. You have not lived until you have been the experience. You are waiting flowers for a greater passion. Somehow it is as if the watcher who observes all the life in the fishbowl is waiting to be invited to live within me. Let us know life together. I would so greatly desire for you to know the things that I have known. And to learn to have such a deep well to where you could turn and see the longing God and embrace it and let it live within you. It's something I can never make you do. I can only lead you to the experience, knowing full well that most of you will always live outside of it, and only a few of you will ever become immersed within it. Before the 10th year of my march, we were camped for 4 years in a valley next to a beautiful river, in a very wild region of what could now be called not quite central Indus. And 4 years from the earth, wonderful hovels were constructed. There was a plateau and a rocky ridge, and an immense forest surrounded this little valley. When we had returned from our campaign, I would always take a position high above the encampment, as vast as it was, near the river where I could smell the water. It was a righteous place that I sat. And I would watch the furor occur, the momentum of excitement and anticipation begin to build below, bread coming from earthen ovens was heavy on the air, and mead, a form of beer, sweetmeats, fires burning, lemon wood, its smell crackling in the air.
I so long and look forward to this moment when old women and young women, when young men and those who were sick in the infirmary would all gather in the great courtyard. They were waiting for something, a slow rumble in the distance, the earth pounding gently as if suddenly it had awoken with its own heartbeat. And over a small ridge coming down a yellow road, there appeared great banners. You could see them in the morning light. They were made of beautiful silk. The banners had beautiful symbols on them. Great, bright, and shining red, a precious color, and green, and flags of blue streamers, all set upon tall and bright standards. And then you saw a heavy fog thrusting through the crevice, a deep mist, and then you saw that it was the breath of mighty horses, mighty steeds, and on them, bright but worn, beautiful men with breastplates shined with shields and their crests and their symbols, their righteous cartouches burnished in the dim morning light. And the thunder would grow louder. They halted once the standards broke over the edge and around the bend, and a great horn blew and blast. And then you would hear the drums, and they would come from a far place, their cadence wild and beautiful. And it created such a rush and momentum, the women began to scream and dance in the courtyard, and the old men bracing one another and nodding, and little children running to and fro, squealing. And black sheep in a pen moving around like a woolen garment, baying, and geese squawking, and somewhere high above, a bird called out, echoed. And here come the drums, far from the rear. The horse's breath is thick, and they dance in place. And they move the beautiful men upon their backs, and their banners, silk and clouds, and their breastplates glittering. Ah, ah, this was a beautiful sight, an assailment on all the senses, the smell of all of that mead and those fires and that laughter and a hint of jasmine that some lovely maiden has preserved during the night, waiting for one who she know in her heart will show soon. And here come the drums. And they're getting louder. And they're wild and beautiful. And it is as if the rock mountains themselves are moved with their thunder. a wind catches the standards and they unfurl and are stiff and their hinges whipping and snapping and crackling and the horse is whinnying and the sheep baying and little children holding back their screams. And here come the drums, mighty drums, pulled by oxen cart, some worn on the backs, one in front and one behind. And the great drummers, tall, mahogany, beautiful, streamers from their thongs. And their parade is so beautiful. And they passed just the beginning sight of the horsemen on either side. And the horses dance in place, excited, all muscles tensed, black manes and silver manes, and frothy noses as the drummers pass. And the whole valley is alive. And they keep coming. And they file down the golden road into the village around the encampment. And suddenly they stop and a horn blasts. And the mounted soldiers begin to march. Old men erect, old warriors erect. Time has not withered their beautiful bodies, their massive arms, wrists clothed in turquoise and leather. Hair down all the way to their back, braided. And they sit upon their steeds like no god ever sat upon a steed. And they ride between the drummers and their file, and saffron dust is kicked up in the air. And a cloud begins to form over the encampment. And you hear a slow moan chant. And here are the foot soldiers. And they march, and their numbers are endless. And as they come around the bend and down the yellow road, a horn blast, and the drummers begin again. And such a parade. And the little children are starting to squeal at the top of their voices and run around laughing. Women are crying and searching each face and touching each foot as it passes. And after 5 long hours, the rear is brought up by a great horse. His name, Shamiradim, Ride with the Wind. His rider, in all remembrance, in all watchfulness, have observed the return of strong and virile men, of strong and beautiful women, strong in their inner strength, golden hair falling in deep ringlets as they sit on the back of their horses, powerful arms. I love these people. There is a thought within me, and a deep breath that can't escape my chest, and it is caught within me, and it doesn't really want to leave, because I never want to leave these people. I never want to not ever hear these sounds of those woolly sheep and the squawking of a goose scared out of its wits by a horse, and those delightful children and those beautiful women looking for their sons and their husbands and their lovers or their daughters. And the great chant and roar of a cry at the end of the march. It's deafening. And the drums are still. And the trumpet is quiet. And there is a rustling of dismounting. And the feast begins. What jolly men and happy women. What wonderful murmurs. Old men clothed in little children hanging all over them, dragging them to prepared chairs and cushions with an overflowing of mead and honey and cream and bread and sweetmeat and fruits delightful and rare. They want to hear all about the adventure. And the old man with the deep smile in their worn faces gladly oblige. And I hear shrills and gasps, and I hear the sounds of war and of march and of conquest filling the air at every corner. I hear laughter and see the sweet garments of lovers as they slip away or quiet embrace. I cannot release this air that is in my chest. It fills me to where I feel my robe and my breastplate. Never shall I forget this morning. Never shall I ever forget it. Twilight. I hear a rustle behind me, but I catch the scent of beer, a phantom who likes mead has brought me a bounty of good smelling things and disappeared and to the dusk. And fires turn the orange horizon pink in the sky, rose and gold. And fireflies and sparks dance. And the beautiful burnished shield of the enchantress rises. The only one tonight. I know that long into the night, the story will never end. and that some young man who is set fixed with green eyes and a taut brow and a strong jaw listening to his hero. Wants the story never to end. He's lived every moment of it. His hero has told it in colorful tones. The moon waxes and wanes. Lights shoot across the sky. And we are home together again. So full of life and vigor. These are the memories and the sights and sounds and smells of the sensual realm. Who girth them up into consciousness that for all time they could unfold in any time. These are the days I knew, glorious beyond description. These are the days I remembered when I emerged into the dark night of the soul in my gaping wound. And my foolishness. These are the sounds I would remember when there was no campaign for nigh 7 years. But the heroes always told the same story. And the little children would all listen as if they had never heard it before. I lie on my back when I can, and I remember that breath that I did not want to let go. Of course, somehow it would expel the magic of the moment. I lie on my back and I hurt deeply, and I find myself holding my breath as if to recapture that wonderful morning and take my terrible pain away. And so many days it did do that. Life as a man, 'twas in all of my journeys my greatest experience. It was the greatest gift of my beloved God, the unknown God that I warred with, and my God delighted in its adversary. It had created the most beautiful garment that fought back. And it liked it a lot. My life as a man was in all of my treasures my most valued. Within that gem are many facets that gave it its fire, and many faces that flash in and out, and they are equally precious to me. I held every one of them in my chest in a breath. Being a human being is the greatest gift bestowed. Starting out a garment is the greatest honor there is. For the garment can become the king, the warrior, the conqueror, the god, the goddess, the wizard. There is no greater life than to have access to all life. Because I deserved it, I earned it. To access all life and all kingdoms, and to play the strings that tie each dimension together like a wind moving through them. It is the most wonderful gift you will ever know, this life. Having that beautiful body, the potential temple of something that waits, mysterious, a throne, a vision. Make no mistake, I laugh and jest at the walking dead in the world. Compared to my life, they have never lived. They are the walking dead, ghost, vaporous and bad smelling. I respect, admire, and love the body, for I know its sacred potential. Make no mistake, I am not without love. I am heavy in it. Some of you know that. I can heal you by embracing you. But it's you who have not felt the embrace. The body suffers because it is you who suffer. It must always be your talisman to change. You're here to learn to have a breath like I had. You're here to hold a moment forever. You're here to learn to live through the wound and the dark night of the soul. You are here to experience these wonderful days of memory, when you are relaxed, you're chattering, your escapades in the labyrinth, your march through the stream, your near-death experience in the tube. Maybe it was just you got gassed. Someone beating up on you and walking over your face. You have a lot of stories to tell. The campaign in the name field. You see, I see in you those same memories. The little children excited, women happy and chattering, and men talking of their brave deeds or their cowardly ones. Each comparing their wounds, their livers, their thyroids. It's the same delightful view. And there's a joy and excitement and an anticipation that markedly you have really never ever experienced in this outside world. There is a brotherhood and a union, and there's a golden road too. There is something that is ancient and primeval, uncorrupted by civilization. It's the same sort of memory. Instead of many beautiful drummers, we have two beautiful drummers. And it's the same sort of march, except it's not in the Indus Valley. It's a different journey. It requires the same amount of strength and tenacity, and even a mask of stoicness. It requires the same sort of impeccable honor and strength. It requires anticipation and a sweet, virtuous consciousness. I've seen it in you, and it delights me, and I am ever so pleased that I remembered those days before my 10th year, because in a grander sense I'm able to recognize them in you, those characters, and that glory and screaming children. I'm able to still recognize them and remember what it was like to be a magnificent man. so be it. Yeah!